improves everything around me. Green, get the money, dollar, dollar bill, yo.
What is going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're here at the end of May. I'm recording on Tuesday, May the 30th, and I'm joined by a very special guest because he is one of the people that I respect the most, not only just in the fantasy industry, but just in the world for the way that he carries himself, the way he treats others with respect, and his successes in all the things that I hold dearly. In terms of family and life and fantasy baseball, of course. He's a top NFBC player. He's a overall main event champion. He's a platinum champion of the high-stakes NFBC league, an NFBC Hall of Famer. He's the only two-time winner of the DraftKings Millionaire Maker, basically $1 million in baseball DFS, and a very well-known provider of content specifically for baseball and some other sports for Roto Grinders. He's at Dave Potts 2 on Twitter. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Potts.
Hey, Vlad. Always a pleasure to talk to you, and I appreciate you inviting me on.
Yeah, we saw each other, I think, last time. We ran into each other a little bit at in Main Event in March, mm-hmm. and then previous to that, you and I and some other folks, we've kind of had like an annual trip because you don't have In-N-Out where you live. And no. So when you come out to Arizona for first pitch, we usually hit that up.
Got to go. I mean, I would go to first pitch because it's great, but I would at least once a year just fly out to a weekend of In-N-Out for sure.
You know, by the way, there's things that, I mean, since I've had kids, just haven't really traveled all that much. And there are a lot of things like I haven't had that, you know, people always talk about. And I don't know. I think sometimes when you have high expectations for something or even low, right, I feel like that can affect your palate, so to speak. So, like, I've never been to Cincinnati. I've never had the Skyline Chili. Whataburger, I think maybe I just had in an airport in Texas or in Dallas. I don't really remember it. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just kind of thrown it out there. Just certain things that I haven't had.
Yeah, I so much don't understand the Skyline Chili thing, and yet, but I mean, you should have it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of things like that, but In-N-Out is the thing that you should have. And if you don't have it near you, you should go find it at least once a year.
Yeah, and also, there's like a certain predisposition. Like me as a Californian, I almost have to defend it to people that say, "Oh, In-N-Out is garbage," right? And most of the time, it would come from folks that can say it on the computer where there are no repercussions, and they may not have even tried it, or they went into that meal, you know, assuming that they weren't going to like it because it's a West Coast burger.
Convincing themselves ahead of time not to like it. I will say one of the big moments of NFBC this March is me and me and Glenn Schroeder took Jupinka to his first ever In-N-Out. He was not a curmudgeon. He enjoyed it. It's an honor and a privilege to introduce other Hall of Famers to the true champion of burgers.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and at the end of the day, we're talking about burgers here, right? Like, I mean, sure, there are occasional ones that are sloppy or something wrong with them, but like for the most part, I don't know. I think like something has to be broken inside of a person if they're really just like not going to enjoy a burger.
Yes, broken people.
So we're going to talk about things that may or may not be broken here today, but I wanted to kind of dive into some NFBC strategy, just some general topics that we have. And I figured you're the perfect person to come on because you've had success for over a decade in this format. You've been very consistent. You've been able to transition that over into DFS and be one of the most successful players over there. And so wanted to talk a little bit about the bridge there. But a very important topic, at least to me, because, you know, I'm also always trying to improve my craft. I'm trying to be a better player, both game theory, draft strategy, in season with FAB, and make better lineup decisions. So I'm always challenging myself, especially with a lot of the hot new competition and people building their own models and better players and multiple teams. I want to be competitive. I still want to be one of the best. I want to win in overall. But there are just so many ways that one can do it. So that's one of the things we want to talk about, how we sort of analyze players preseason, how we build our teams and things like that. But the first thing I wanted to ask you, so you, I was searching through your teams in NFBC, and I know you've dabbled in multiple entries over the years and have been quite successful, but I noticed you only have two teams this year. So pretty much less volume than usual, right? Just like the main event and that auction team.
Yeah, that's all I did. Basically, you know, I'm a pretty old dude, really. People don't realize I'm 87 years old. I just look amazing. But I've been doing this so long, and I'm tired. It's not that I don't love it. It's that I haven't done a slow draft, a draft Champions League in, I don't know, 5 years. Like, I just aged out of those. I was like, I can't take the people yelling at each other in a chat room more than for like 5 minutes. And I was just like, okay, I'm out on that. 12 teamers. I love 12 teams, like the online championship. But the amount of time it takes in Fab, because how many more players there are, I just don't have the energy for it. I mean, it's kind of like, I really do feel like just old guy on the street back in my day. But like on Sunday evening, like at some point I just want to go to bed. Like I can't do all the 12 teamers anymore. And even honestly with two teams, and what, 2 months into the season, I'm already like a couple Sundays, like I've barely looked at it. I'm like, yeah, okay, this guy's hurt. I'm going to pick somebody up. But I just sort of, I've just sort of reached that point where I don't have that crazy fire to, you know, spend hours and hours on Fab every week on multiple teams. And I know that before the season, like for the last few years, I've sort of been like, you always get that draft season buzz. Like everyone loves drafting. Like, well, I can do a couple more teams. I'll do a couple more. I'll be fine. And then by like a few weeks in, I'm like, why in the world did I do this? So I did back way off this year. And most likely we'll continue to do that. Just sort of the stage I'm at in my life.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's not quite the same, but I do get a little tired myself. And of course, I mean, obviously over the course of the season, like you don't have the same gusto and drive as when the season first starts and you're doing Fab as opposed to like in the doldrums of late July, early August, right? When it just, it gets tiring no matter who you are, no matter how much you love baseball, it just does. But this is just something I thought of right now is I've recognized I've been having a little bit of performance anxiety with my Fab on Sunday afternoons. And I do have 10 teams that I have to manage. But what it is that I'm super locked in when I'm writing my Fab article on Friday night and Saturday morning. And usually I will throw some players in or just, you know, I have my drop set up and I have my general guys and then whatever player's been added, you know, Matt McClain comes up on a Saturday. So then he's available on a Sunday. I'll add those guys into my waterfalls on Sunday. And then you know, I spend some time with the family. I'm doing things. And then comes Sunday afternoon, I'm locked in. I've got a few hours left. And all of a sudden, like I can't perform. Like I can't really decide what I want. I forgot which team needs what. And sure, I have my spreadsheets I can reference. But man, then I'm thinking it's a long season. And then I got to save some money. But I really need this guy. But it's Bobby Miller, you know. So I've been kind of having a little bit of that. And I'm sure I'm not the only one. And I'm supposed to be like, you know, the Fab Master and have no qualms. But just putting it out there, right? Like when it comes down to it and you have so many teams, it can get grating. So I know exactly what you mean.
And another thing that bothers me about it is like I am okay with having my own biases. And like I just don't always want to make the air quotes right move of dropping a guy who's, you know, if the draft was today, I would take this guy ahead of this guy, but I just kind of want to keep the guy on my team. Cause I have I forget what the correct psychological terms are, but you know, if you drop a guy and then he ends up taking off and somebody else gets him next week and he has a great year, like I can't deal with that. I don't even want to mess with it. I'd rather just keep the lesser player to not have to mess with it. Like,
yeah,
that's not the correct way to play, but like that's just something else that gets in my head.
No, and it happens all the time. I remember, I mean, well, this is completely different, but many years ago, the Mr. Jupinka, fellow Hall of Famer of NFBC that you mentioned, I'll never forget a year I was in a main event with him, and it was the Mike Trout blow-up year. Mm-hmm. And it's the exact opposite of what you're saying, but I was holding on to Trevor Bauer because I had drafted him, and I guess, you know, the sunk cost fallacy or whatever. and I just could not drop him. And I had other, he was like the worst player on my team, but when he came up, he was supposed to go off and I just couldn't do it. But at the end of the day, when it, you know, came down for Mike, you know, to bid on Mike Trout, I did it, but very subtle. And at the time, this is early June, I believe, maybe late May. And I was up maybe 25 points on anyone else in second place. And at that point you're it, and we can talk about this too. You sometimes can feel unstoppable, right? You're that high up. It's early on. You don't see like the clouds and, you know, for the trees or whatever that term is. And you don't realize how long of a season, how things can turn at a dime. So ended up, I got underbid. I did try to drop Bauer. I did not get Trout. Steve Jupinka got Trout, and the rest was history. So caught up little by little. And granted, it wasn't just Trout. He's a great manager. He did a lot of things else correctly. But he went and just, you know, I think he beat me and everyone else by like 15 points at least in that league. And then it was one of his good overall years as well. So,
and you don't hear him saying phrases like seeing the clouds and the trees. No. That's not a thing that people say, Vlad. Seeing the forest for the trees, but
there whatever. It is.
yeah, no, I hear you.
Yeah. And so this brings me to, I don't know, just randomly, like I'm kind of seeing, and this is not calling anyone out specifically. Like I do this in a different way, right? So sometimes when I kind of want to show off I'm doing well, and this is me just being transparent, I'll make it into like a self-deprecating thing or a jinx, or, you know, I'll bring someone else into it. I don't really go, rah, rah, look at me in May and how I'm doing, because I've been down this road before. I've played so many years and I've seen things happen. They don't always work out. A beautiful team in the end of May could be absolute garbage by the end of the season. But I'm seeing a lot of early victory laps. Like it's weird. Like it's a again, not calling any specific people out, but it's a collective thing where you get a couple things right and you just feel like you're really feeling yourself, right? And that's not something we really saw with the old guard. Granted, we didn't have Twitter, and granted, we still have, you know, you still got Masato. You still got, you know, the wonderful, fantastic player, Gecko Cerebro, very confident people, you know, they're out there, they're talking, but we don't see it to this extent. Like people that don't back it up or haven't done well are still like talking a lot of smack this early.
Yeah. Twitter has changed everything about the world and really about fantasy baseball. And it's not really my favorite thing in the world. It kind of echoes what you see in DFS with all the screenshots. And a lot of it is the sheer number of industry people now. I mean, I would venture to guess 70% of the people playing in the NFBC are in somewhere or another in the industry. Like it's wild. And so that's kind of like a thing you need to do for cloud if you're trying to build up your name, just like the screenshot in DFS. It doesn't bother me one way or another. Like that's not my thing. I don't ever do that. I don't bemoan anyone for doing it. I would choose for them not to if it's just up to me, but it's not, and it's fine. And I understand if, you know, people are trying to build up their names. And if it's for content, I mean, that's just what the game is. And really in reality, it doesn't even matter if they end up doing well or not, if they get the followers and people thinking, okay, well, this guy obviously knows, look at that team. Well, then it worked. Doesn't matter if the team fizzles or not. So I don't officially like it, but I understand it. And you know,
I mean, it's like the DFS tout who posts the $150,000 win screenshot, but then you don't see anything for a month, and chances are they're probably losing over that month, because otherwise they'd probably have a screenshot.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing. Yeah, like people are easily fooled by what they see. But then on the other side of that, like some of the people actually very much legitimately are great players and maybe even have a great team and maybe posting a team that ends up winning and, you know, great. Like I say, I'm not trying to tell anyone not to do that. It's just not really my thing personally.
Yeah. And actually a good, I guess, example of that is, I mean, you know, my annual this year's Yelich column, I kind of don't like to do it anymore. And it's not just because somebody in my Discord just out of nowhere popped in and kind of, it wasn't very aggressive. It was a guy that just popped in and was like, oh, Vlad, you know, you're kind of losing it. You know, last couple of years, you've had some great calls over your career, but man, Ward is just horrible. It's kids. He had kids. It fried your brain. Honestly, didn't really offend me. You know, obviously I wanted the Ward call to happen. I still know that there are still 4 months in the season and anything could happen. He could still be a guy. We've seen him go through his stretches early last season, end of last season. And I'd like for it to work out, but I don't think I'm going to be defined based on whether, maybe I might be to some people, but I don't really care because the people that know me and like me for what I do, they do that. But then I realized that my Yelich column is almost like a gimmick and yeah, it brings eyeballs, but like, I really don't like doing it because I'm putting myself in one person where I'm trying to recreate something that I did 5 years ago. And of course, everyone is going to fail. And maybe I might hit one again in a couple of years. But to me, it almost loses the value of what I'm trying to do. And my article every year, and I don't know if I'm sure you've read it before, it's not literally about one guy. It's about right. The theory of finding that breakout. And there are always several other examples. You know, Aaron Judge was one of my sort of runner-ups, but didn't quite fit the criteria last year. Vladimir Guerrero a couple years ago? So it's more about, you know, it's not about trying to get the right player exactly, but that's kind of what it's become. So honestly, I'm saying right now, I don't know if I want to do this year. I don't know. FTM might be mad, but like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense. I mean, and like, I can relate that to, you know, the DFS stuff where like I write this huge article every day that breaks down why, what I'm looking at and why I'm looking at what I'm looking at. And yeah, eventually you need to point out, okay, this is the player I like, but that's not the point. Like, and I don't ever want to have like today, this is the one player that is the best. Like there is no such thing. It's the thought process that the digging into it. And yes, most of us who read your article get that out of it.
Yeah, and that's another thing, by the way.
Taylor Ward's mom understands. Like, she read it. She loved it. She's like, I'm not going to draft that guy.
Yeah, yeah. And she's talking smack to Mickey Moniak's mom and setting up the hotel to poison his food on the road. I just kind of want to put that out there. Again, it's weird. Like, I'm generally I'm kind of a sensitive person, more so than a normal person, if that makes sense. But I feel like I've grown sort of thicker skin throughout my years on Twitter, right? It's like, I'm not like that offended. If someone doesn't like it, whatever, we'll kind of move on, take care of the people that we like and that know us.
Yeah. The old mute button is glorious. There's probably a lot more people still yelling at me than I know about. They're on mute.
Who the heck has a problem with Dave? That I couldn't even imagine. I couldn't imagine someone saying like, oh, you picked this stack, but it didn't work out.
Oh, but they hate you for it. Yeah,
they do. So the topic of today, I want to talk a little bit about about unsexy, because it's something that I see works in fantasy sports and NFBC and unsexy.
In life, I hope.
What's that?
And in life, I
hope. And in life. Yeah. It's what it comes down to is there's no one way to, and actually you probably can't say this anymore in 2023 and skin the cat, because it probably shouldn't be skinning cats, but
right.
Is there a better phrase?
Probably. I like it.
Let's go with that. So there's many ways to skin a cat in NFBC. And I think there has been some mention before, and I don't know if you've said it or other people have said it, especially with the strong DFS background, is that the main events, the 15 teamers with a smaller overall pool, like if you're fighting for the overall, they're almost more a little bit like cash games. You want to have players with higher floors, whereas in the 12 team, and it's not like that absolute, but then like in the 12 teamers with a 3,000 people, 4,000 people in these contests, you can sort of shoot for the fences. You can go for those sort of players with more upside, hit that prospect. I think there is a little bit of that. But what I'm getting at is that when I see builds going out of the draft from Vegas in late March of folks like yourself, like Steve Jupinka, like Scott Jenstad, where I'll drive back in the car from Scott, I'm like, man, this team is boring as hell. This team is so unsexy. Who the hell, who wants these players? Yet somehow you guys are always ending up near the top of the standings consistently. And I really think there's something, to that, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously something to it. And there's a lot of kind of different avenues to it. But I think the biggest way I would kind of encapsulate it, I don't know about words sometimes, Vlad. So if you were to say, like, however you do your preseason prep, like, let's say you end up with projections for every player, however you get to your projections or your rankings or your dollar values, like, that is the most likely scenario for each player, however you personally do that. Well, if you do that correctly, then every single player has both upside and downside from that. And yet all you ever hear about is the young, sexy next thing having upside. That's it. You never hear about the boring 32-year-old having upside, but he does. Like, if you're from whatever projection you're starting with, like, no one's going to land exactly on that. Some people are going to have a better year or a worse year. Like, it's just as likely that the boring old guy beats his projection by 20% than that the young guy beats his projection by 20%, even more likely, actually. But like, it's just like, there's so much incessant, like, beating of the drum of like, look at the upside for this guy. This guy could go 40-40s. Yay. Woo-hoo-hoo. Yeah, everybody has upside from like a median projection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and, but there's certain
guys who everyone is going to pass on because they presumably don't have any upside from there.
Yeah. And a lot of times those are players that are good value, so to speak, as to, you know, per their ADP and based on their projections that are comparable to other guys that might be sort of sexier and more upside. So I was looking at a couple of your teams, your two teams. You have two teams in the NFBC this year. One is your main event team. It's middle of the pack. I'm sure if I know Dave Potts well, it'll be creeping up. I think the team actually has some pretty good bones and is underperforming.
I'm going to finish seventh for sure, at least.
Well, your other team, it's the NFBC auction. So you did an auction championship. I'm not too far behind you there in the overall standings. I love my team there. I would love for it to do well. We'll see. Again, 4 months ago, not even really thinking about that all that much. But right now, yours is third overall. And looking at it, it's just not a sexy team. Not at all. It's really well balanced. You did not do the stars and scrubs. I don't know. By the way, is that something you do every year? Or do you change based on whether you do stars and scrubs and balance per season?
I almost never do stars and scrubs. Like this whole, what you were just talking about, the unsexy build, because of the way auction values work, like, it works way better in an auction. Because you can only get so much discount on a round by round draft in a snake draft. Yeah. But in an auction, like, that's really where you do see the bigger separation in getting the boring values. The general way I like to play just fits better with the auction format.
So I'm looking at it, and it doesn't pop to me. You know, I mean, you've got Jazz Chisholm holding it down on the bench. Hopefully he'll be back soon. Nice little bargain on Cody Bellinger that eventually he'll be back, and he was off to a really good start. And then the rest of the hitting are your quintessential unsexy guys. I mean, straight up, Cedric Mullins. I don't understand why he, you know, doesn't kind of fit that profile of sexy, considering he can hit some homers. He runs a lot. Baltimore's a rising team, but nevertheless, he was a guy that people sort of passed on. And I think he was also a popular fade the previous season. Tommy Edman, another guy I personally wasn't interested in. I just didn't know if he was going to be leading off all year, but apparently he could steal bases from anywhere. Brian Reynolds, I do feel, was a little bit sort of sexier than usual this season. But nevertheless, he does kind of fit that profile of, because he plays for Pittsburgh, that in and of itself is not sexy. Christian Walker, guy that I feel like that people underrate, one of the best power hitters in baseball, plays in Arizona. So he's obviously fantastic. Eugenio Suarez, bad average, big power. Nick Castellanos, not a lot of people were buying in on him being able to turn things around and bounce back. He hasn't yet, but he still might. Alex Bregman, same thing. He's almost like the poster boy. He used to be like a Kyle Seager. Now it's Alex Bregman. You look at his real life stats. It's like, wow, he always walks more than he strikes out. It's amazing. But where's the fantasy value? And you see all these analysts talking about, you know, Bregman's not worth it, blah, blah, blah. And then even Wander Franco. You have Wander Franco on this team who, if he had played last season, he would have been sexy as hell, right? But because people didn't know what to expect And I think analysts got into everyone's head, a couple people saying, and maybe myself included, I don't know about the power. What about the power? Right? Doesn't matter. He's been an absolute beast, right? So didn't he also kind of fit in that sort of unsexy mold?
Yeah, of all the guys on this team, like the one that I don't understand how he wasn't hyped is Franco. Like, to me, like, that's exactly the guy that should be overhyped. Like he was 2 years ago before we'd really seen him. And he also fit, but he does generally fit the mold of the things he definitely does well are not sexy, like his batting average and runs. But those categories count every bit as much as the other three. I double checked. I asked Greg, I was like, do these count the same? And he said, yes. So the fact that, I mean, I got Franco for, I think $1 more than Volpe went for. I mean, amazing. I think that's just silly. Like, what are we doing?
That's silly. It's silly. It's incredibly silly. And there really is something, there's some psychology that I feel like I personally am able to work around every year. It's the players that are the post-type guys that are really good real-life hitters. Like we know Wander Franco, in his first stint in the major leagues, he was one of the best contact hitters in baseball. He looked like he was going to be really good. Really, the only question was the power. I don't think anyone knew he would run so much. But because he missed half the season and people are so like locked into like those small samples, and you look at his numbers and you kind of extrapolate and be like, oh, well, it'll just be 14 home runs along with whatever. Let's go with Volpe. I can get the 40 stolen base upside.
Yeah, there's a lot. And that's really, I mean, Bregman is sort of like that too now. And like, I think the reason Bregman gets such a bad rap is because he was a first round player a few years ago. And so I think... Yeah. When you hear analysts harping on him, they're harping on him from the standpoint of being a second round, third round pick. Well, that's not, nobody's picking him there. Now he's, I mean, I think I spent less than $15 on him, $14. Like, I think he gets harped on from the perspective of when he was a $30 player just a few years ago. Well, I'm just taking what he is now, which mm-hmm. is a good real life baseball player. Of the other guys you mentioned, like there's a lot of people, I don't really understand why they're not loved more than they're like the Christian Walker thing. I mean, there aren't many players in the league with more bankable power than him. I mean, he had one down year, but like he hit 36 homers last year. I had to double check. Yeah. And he hit 30 like 2 years ago and nobody wants him. I guess nobody wants Brian Reynolds because he plays for Pittsburgh, but like, if you really look at what they do, it's basically the same as all these players that cost $30 in an auction, which is exactly why the auction works for me better, because I like to get those guys. Mm. It would be like if you could trade draft picks in a main event and say, I'll give you my first, second, 20th, and 21st for your 7, 8, 9, 10. Like that's what I would do, and that's the team I would build. And that's kind of what I'm doing in an auction, because I feel like that's where all the players are really similar to the second-round players. It's just like a teeny little something here or there. And nobody wants them.
And you're still obviously managing the categories. Like as you are making your picks and you obviously have your auction plan, you're still hitting your categories, right? You're still getting your speed along the way. You're making sure you're cognizant of batting average on all those things as you're making your picks, right?
Yeah. I mean, one thing I've done as the years go by, like I'm just very well aware of my own weaknesses. This is something I usually talk about in Arizona when we do the panel. Like everyone's got strengths and weaknesses, both in the draft and in season. And you can improve upon those weaknesses, but I think it's also reasonable to just say, okay, this is how I do things. And so the only two batters I spent $20 for were Jazz and Mullins, because I know like I don't find speed in FAP. It's not going to happen. It would be great if I could say, oh, that's what I'm doing this year, but it's not. So like the two guys I spent on were going to get me some speed. Like I knew I needed to get that. That's also why I got Edmund. Just make sure I have that covered no matter what. I know that I'm willing to take shots on, power in FAB more than speed. So that's exactly why I spent what I spent on those guys. So yeah, I'm very much tracking categories and like, getting Franco in there, that's what made me not worry about Suarez and Walker being my corner infielders for power. Like it all plays together very well. As boring as it all is, it does make sense as a as a puzzle piece. It's, I've got kind of a little bit of everything.
And the and did you over project for stolen bases? Like, were you planning with the rule changes to make sure, let me just make sure I get a little bit of extra speed?
So essentially no, because I just figured everyone's going up. And so I didn't want to try to guess what the number needed to be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like I knew the number would need to be higher, but I didn't feel like I had any reason to ballpark. Like, okay, if I wanted 120 steals last year, I want 152 this year. Like I didn't know what that number was going to be. So it was more of a vague, okay, I want this many stolen base guys, with a stolen base guy being like 20 to 30. Mm-hmm. If things don't even explode, if they just kind of go up a little bit.
And then a quick side note on your pitching, just because I wanted to mention it on this team, because it is a really good team. You did unfortunately lose Robbie Ray. You lost Tristan McKenzie. He's expected back, I believe, next week. You also have Zach Wheeler. You've got Joe Ryan, phenomenal. And then you've pieced things together. You have some really good timing on players. For example, I think did you start with Kyle Bradish, or did you pick him up in Fab later?
Actually, both.
Oh.
I believe he was I
got him back.
Good look at my boy. I did. I drafted him for $2, used him, dropped him, picked him up.
Love that. Those are sometimes the best bet. Those are some of the best. They're like they're our guys. They're ingrained in our souls. Michael Lorenzen and JP France, two guys that you've timed really well. They both have just a few starts among them, maybe like five or six, but a sub-2 ERA was phenomenal. And then you timed it well with me and got out at the right time, Patrick Corbin.
that was so glorious. Yes.
Yeah. Things like that rarely happen. And then you're almost waiting for like some, I guess, bad roto karma after you take a shot like that, right?
Yeah. There's nothing better than when you get the two wins out of that guy, especially when you've got Kyle Finnegan sitting behind him and he saves the game. Like, mm-hmm. you know you're going to get bit on some of those, right? And I mean, like this week, I started Ryan Nelson. This present week, if you're listening to this in present day, and he kind of got shelled a little bit yesterday, but he got a win. Like it was totally, mm-hmm. He's already worth that pickup for a couple bucks, and I'm definitely dropping him next week. Like I'm going to need to get lucky on a fair amount of these guys to really compete. And then like with the France and Lorenzen, that's right. The level kind of guy, like I don't have any idea yet if I'm holding on to them or dropping that. Like it's going to depend. Ideally you get some of these guys and they can just be on your team all year, and maybe you don't start them every week, but they can kind of fill in for the Robbie Ray loss.
That's actually great. I wanted to ask you this, cause this is something I've ranted about in the past, is I am not a huge fan of ROS, rest of season questions. And I wanted to get your take on it, cause sometimes I get these questions and I want to be honest, but I sometimes don't know, because sometimes it's not a rest of season question. If you ask me Michael Lorenzen or JP France for rest of season, I could take a stab at it, but chances are I think what are their schedules the next couple of weeks? If you're forced to hold on to one, you look back at what you kind of do the whole dance. You go back, you look at their numbers, you look at their underlying stuff, you look at their future matchups, all those things, right? Like what's your take on ROS question?
Yeah, I agree. I don't have any idea. Like it's even more so from being more on the DFS side. But the way I look at guys that I'm picking up mostly for streaming with pitchers, like, yeah, I have not really thought past next week with them. And especially if it's someone like JP France, who we haven't seen before, like I don't want to try to make a call on him yet for August. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I'm comfortable saying I don't know.
Yeah, that answers it. So basically, tell me if I'm wrong here. I mean, I could totally be, but the way I see it is the sort of the three distinct styles of drafters. And this is just me if I was to put them in buckets. And one, of course, is the one that I think, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that I think that you, Scott Jenstad, Jupink, and other people, a lot of older, not older by age, but older in experience, vets.
or both, whatever.
Fantasy veterans. Like, so I just mentioned Kyle Seager, kind of like the poster boy for it. I mean, there are a lot of examples of it over the years, but like these players that other people aren't super interested in, they're not drafting about, they're not talking about them, but they have a more sort of consistent floor. Like you can almost predict that it's not like the Mondesi, right? Where you just don't know what the outcome could be. It could be from like missing the entire season to like the moon. And so the more of those guys you sort of piece together with the higher floors, and they may not maybe exceed and have, you know, those massive upticks or major seasons, you build a bunch of those guys together, those boring, unsexy sort of old school guys. I think that's sort of one style. I think a second is the hype chaser. And I see this a lot. You're going after every single fun upside guy, the prospect, the spring training breakout. It's the people that they had to, and not that they're wrong, but they moved up Spencer Strider into, you know, ahead of the other pitchers, Cole or whatever. At some point in draft season, that started happening to me. I'm like, wait a second, maybe Strider might be the best pitcher. But there's something about his, I guess, not his aura, but his profile that is like, it feels a little sketch. Same thing DeGrom with the injury history. Like some people had to have DeGrom. You go later down the line, every spring training guy that was going off, the Clark Schmidt stuff annoyed the heck out of me. I don't know why, but it's like, no, I'm not going to draft him, like out of principle. Volpe, where he was going, I just couldn't do it. It's one thing, he's going in the 200s. Now you're going top 100. No, thank you. The Corbin Carrolls, the Hunter Greens, some of them work out, some of them don't. Highly volatile. For me, it's been the Tyler O'Neills or the Stantons. It's the you owe me guys over the years. And then I think everyone else is sort of in between. And I don't know what that number is. Maybe it's 75% of drafters. It's a little bit of everything. They like some of the last year's bums. They jump in on certain prospects that they like. They get some of the old boring vets, and they mix it up. They're not really overly swayed by the hype. But how do you fall on my projection of those three?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. And I would even say that last bucket, I'd almost split that up into two, in that some people are just simply drafting off a list. And sometimes on that list, it happens to be an old guy. Sometimes it happens to be a hype guy. And it's less of they're a certain type of player. What I'll say is, like, I'm very obviously in that first camp. I am the boring, unsexy old person. And I feel great about it. But I will say, at least in the main event, I've tried to sort of shift a little bit. And I take a few more shots. Like, if you look at my main event team that's not doing well, surprising, like, you'll see Stanton and Mondesi on the bench. Those are the kind of things I've been doing a little bit more. I think the big difference between the way I do it and like the hype chasers is I pretty much have to be getting a discount, whether it's a young guy or an old guy. Like, I'm not going to be taking Corbin Carroll in the third round. Like, this, mm-hmm. that's just not going to be my thing. I don't think it's wrong. It's just, I am who I am, and that's not what I'm going to do. But like, you know, when Stanton is in the 11th round, yeah, I'm going to do that because I understand what could happen if he's not on the IL. And then like this year, I mean, I got Mondesi in, I don't know, the 20th round. And mm-hmm. I knew that at the point I took him, I didn't have anyone else who was hurt. And I was like, I can stash him for 2 months and let's just see if he comes back. But usually when I try to get sneaky like that in a main event, I'm just being dumb, and I know I'm being dumb, and I don't even like it. It's just like, I feel like I'm supposed to. A couple times in the last few years, I've taken the Byron Buxton or the Mondesi early and I didn't even like it when I did it, but I'm like, oh, this is, look at me. Mm-hmm. It's just not my thing, and it doesn't work when I do it and I don't enjoy it. And yeah, get off my lawn. Basically.
Get off my lawn. Yeah. And the funny thing is, you may, I don't know. I mean, and everybody is different. That's the beauty of it. Like, we all kind of have our own roto DNA, so to speak, that it decides what type of decisions we make and what paths we go down. But maybe, I mean, you still took your Stanton and Mondesi risks this season. It was only a couple of guys, obviously a couple of on the extreme spectrum. But had Buxton worked out for you, or a couple of those shots worked out for you last year, maybe you could have gone a little bit more in the direction, or maybe not.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, no. So when you say that with the roto DNA, I think this, you can trace this back to somewhere for everyone. I mean, I think when you look at, if you go back and look at the team that I won the overall with, it sort of put me on the map. Like, that was the very definition of everything working out perfectly with the boring old guys. And so, like, I'm always somewhere in the back of my head going to be chasing that team, you know? And I think people that won their big, whatever their big win is that did it the other way, or so I was going to be chasing that. Like, why would you not? I think, like, when I won the NFBC, maybe 2 years later or a couple years later, Glenn Schroeder won with, like, the year that Mookie Betts and Chris Bryant were rookies and he took them super early. Well, if I were him, I would probably just be playing that way forever. You know, like, okay, yeah. Well, that, so I think there's something to that. Like, what is the thing that you did that's worked for you? And let's kind of chase that. The one place I've grown a little bit is in FAB. I'm a little more willing to chase the young guys now because I know that the type of players I like in the draft that we keep talking about, those guys aren't available in season. Like, the people who are boring old guys who went undrafted through 30 rounds are not good enough to want. So I have kind of come around to, depending on my team needs, taking shots on younger guys. Like, my main event team has, I got Matt McClain and Matt Mervis. I like people named Matt, apparently. Like, you know, I needed some hitting. I'm like, eh, let me just see what happens. That's kind of the area now I'm trying to grow a little bit and say, in FAB, I don't need to just take these boring old guys that are worth nothing. That's where I can maybe take some of these silly shots.
And that's another, I mean, that's a whole conversation I actually wanted to discuss with you, because we do have this amazing influx, something that I believe we've never seen before, with every week a new rookie pitcher on the radar, basically commanding large sums of FAB dollars. But a quick thought before that, do you think there's any chance that we could ever bring Unsexy back, like, to fantasy, where, like, that becomes the new thing, or, like, the boring old guys are popular? Or it just can't, by definition. It always has to be the upside, right?
Yeah, I think by definition we can't, and I don't even think we should want to. And like, that's the funny thing. I mean, like, a lot of people talk about it all the time, you know, and, like, it clearly works a lot for a lot of people, but still nobody cares because it's not exciting. So I think that's just where we're at.
Is it an edge in some way?
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel? Yeah.
It's absolutely an edge, yeah.
Like, love it. Okay.
I want you to, by all means, take Hunter Green in the second round. He could strike out everybody. You don't know.
He's love those strikeouts. Lots of strikeouts. And the strikeout quarter category weighs more heavily than
that's
the other
one. That's what I also confirmed that with Greg this morning. Yeah, he said that's the main one.
Mm-hmm. So about FAB, we kind of touched on it real quick, but is it true? Is this from you or is this from somebody else? Was it maybe Jupink? I forget that you don't spend more than $200 on a single player. You don't really kind of chase those guys. Is that a rule that came that I remember you telling me, or is that not the case?
That sounds like some other jabroni would have said flat. I don't. Okay. So I definitely don't have like a hard cap like that. But in general, I think you probably heard me say something like, I almost never get one of those guys. Like, it has to be just the perfect right moment of the season. And even like, so like this year on that auction team where my hitting is great and I kind of needed some pitching, I've put in some, what I consider to be silly big bids on some of these guys. And I haven't gotten one of them yet.
And what numbers are those range?
Like over 200. Mm-hmm. Like when I looked at this, I don't have a $200 cap anymore. I know that BB, I put 240 on, I think, or something, didn't get him. Like this week, who was it? It was Bobby Miller. I thought I was doing well bidding basically 200. I think he went for like 350 and one. Yeah. I mean, this is where, like, I don't know what we're doing. Like, I like these young pitchers, but this is where I think we're overrating the difference between who these guys are and who Kyle Bradish is, or who Taiwan Walker is, or who even Ryan Nelson is, honestly. Like, you're only getting so many starts out of anyone. Even picking him up now, like, what is Bobby Miller going to get? He might only get 3 starts, but even if he's in the rotation all year, what does that mean? 11 starts? Really? For the Dodgers? I mean, I don't know. It seems something's off in the way we're valuing these guys, I think.
You know what I want from these guys? I want not to get a blow up. I want to not get that 7-run game. And they're just,
yeah.
I don't know. Is there something about specific profiles? Like, how do you decide? Like, you and I were not like the biggest prospect guys, right? Got a million other things that we're concentrating on. When, I didn't know much about Bryce Miller before he came up. And I feel like I know enough about prospects. Tanner Bibee, Bobby Miller, Yuri Perez, Logan Allen. Is there something like deep in your instinct and your gut with your experience that you have felt specifically about one of these guys this year, where it's like beyond the numbers and stats or whatever, like I'm feeling this guy, like this is the guy that's going to be like awesome, or you not get that?
I don't, because you just know. You can go back as far as you want with pitching prospects. They are all blow up prone the first couple of years. Like you just don't possibly, I mean, one or two of them will magically not do it, but like even the guys who ended up being the best pitchers ever, like a lot of them for those
Scherzer, first, right?
Yeah. Scherzer was horrendous. Like, and basically I don't think whoever you want to put out there, Bryce Miller or Taj Bradley, whoever, like all these guys, they're going to get blown up. Maybe not as often as Patrick Corbin, for example, but similarly badly. Like it's because they're kids. And like, I don't know what we're hoping for. I mean, like Bryce Miller gave up 8 runs yesterday. That's going to happen again. And I don't know. I'll take my $1 Ryan Nelson giving up 5 runs and getting me the win. I realize Bryce Miller is better than Ryan Nelson, but only to kind of an extent for our purposes right now, if that makes sense.
Yes. And also the, how we think of them, like on the pedestal of, I mean, I swear to you, I saw tweets of Bryce Miller is one of the best pitchers in baseball. I don't know who did it. I don't know where I saw it, but there was like talk of with all of his numbers and stuff plus and this and that, like he's one of the best out there. And you knew it was inevitable, right? And it's not a, and I told you so. I mean, just because I don't have Bryce Miller, I'm not going to say like, you know, somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm like, you know, I'm not doing that. But I mean, like, dude, you're not God, right? Because I mean, who's going to be able to, even the, like you mentioned, even the best pitchers all through time, unless you think they're going to maintain an ERA under 2 for the, you know, their entire rookie season, which I don't know the last time somebody did that. Just doesn't happen, right? Even George Kirby, who was splendid last year, he walked nobody. His control was amazing. He really stood out as a rookie, like just mature beyond his years. He had his occasional blowups. In fact, he got blown up just a couple of weeks ago. But there's so much that our thoughts of them change. We recognize they're human. Like to me, Tanner Bibee was so awesome for those first couple of starts. You're like, this guy's never gonna. This is what I'm looking for. He's never gonna give up more than 2 and 3 earned runs in a game. And then as soon as you say that, that's when he gets hit. That's what happened in his third or fourth start, I believe. The same thing that happened to Bryce Miller. And then and our minds change a little bit. And we can go extreme sometimes. We can go from like, Bryce Miller's locked into my lineup for the entire season to, oh, crap, he just gave up 8 earned runs. Lorenzen's facing the A's. Oh, that's an easy call. I got to bench Bryce Miller now.
Yeah, and you'll see that every week. Like, if you take this whole clump of rookies that have gone for the $200, $300 range, like they're not all going to be every week starters. There's just no way around it. One or two of them might end up being worth it, whatever you determine to be worth it. But I also know in the time that you use that $200, I'm going to have 20 different players in my lineup who also will get blown up sometimes, but it'll end up being a similar-ish looking stat line for what I need for that money.
By the way, I wanted to ask you, because I know you're not playing 12 teamers this year, but I've got my usual 5 OCs, and I've noticed that the rookie bid, the rookie pitcher bid ranges have also been very high, when in fact they shouldn't be. These should definitely not be 200 plus pitchers, considering what's available on free agency every single week. It's wild. Oh, yeah. And I learned my own lesson all these years I've been playing. Guess what I did a couple of weeks ago? I had picked up Gavin Stone on a few teams on 15s, like cheap, under $10. Like I was like, oh, I'm so smart. I'm going to get him before he comes up. And then the Urias injury happened. And you know, things were falling apart there. I mean, Dustin May got hurt. I'm like, oh great. I got myself a gem. And then I'm like, well, let me get a full collection of Gavin Stone. So in 12 teamers, I had some money left. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to make sure I get them. And I got exactly what I deserved. I bumped up a $60 bid where I would have gotten him to $130 to make sure I got him. I get the, you know, the 12 earned runs on my face or whatever it was. And then I drop them. all these years I've been playing, how am I still doing this stuff?
Yeah, it's hard not to. And what's funny is like the way that I do the pitcher thing, like it works way better in 12 teamers. And the way I do the hitter thing works well better in 15 teamers. Like I should probably just partner with someone and I do the hitting on the 15 teamers and pitching on the 12 teamers. Like for exactly what you say, like the streaming starters is way better in the 12 teamer. Like the pitchers are better. Like you don't need a $200 Miller. Like, cause you don't ever have to get Patrick Corbin and Ryan Nelson. Like you're picking up pretty decent pitchers week after week.
And it makes you think more, right? Because you might have, you say Kikuchi available and you're looking at that two step, and then it makes you really dig into it because you're looking at him versus all these other options. Or even if you have him on your team, you're like, you know what? There's enough available on here that he gets, I forgot, Milwaukee and the Mets or whatever that combo is. I'm like, you know what? I don't like that. They hit lefties well this and that. And I just don't want to do it. Why do I want to put myself in a situation to get blown up just for, a few strikeouts and damage to the whip? So a lot more thinking I feel like needs to be done in 12. In 15s, you're like, oh, I have Kikuchi. He's in. I'm starting him.
Right. Yeah. There are a lot of no-brainers, which is kind of a good thing. That's one point where doing DFS kind of helps because you're digging into these guys anyway. So you're kind of not doubling up your workload for no reason. But do you have Kikuchi this week, I wonder?
I dropped him, I believe. I had him on a 12, and I was like, I don't want it. I'm just kind of, looking at the game logs. I'm looking at the matchups. I'm looking at, WRC plus ISO and WOBA against lefties. Also, in fact, I sometimes have a like a regression feel. Like, for example, Dodgers over the years, especially when they had Justin Turner and some of these other guys who hit lefties really well, they're always near the top against left-handed pitching. And this year they've been really bad against it, other than like Chris Taylor hits a bomb every time against a lefty. For some reason, I felt like they're kind of like, isn't that like due? Because it's a long season, right? Like at some point, this is, the other shoe's going to drop and these guys are going to just regress towards their career means against lefties. Same thing with the Angels. A bunch of guys here, Renfroe, Mike Trout, like all these guys that hit lefties well, yet all their numbers are like, they're like 18th overall against lefties. So I don't think they're going to end up 18th. I think that's going to kind of come up a little bit. And I forgot where the case was, but I faded, or basically I sat a starting pitcher in DFS that was really popular, a lefty. Oh, was it Paxton? It was something. It was a situation where Paxton was super chalk. I knew it. And yeah, it was against the Angels. And I just said to myself, all the numbers, everything tells me, if you look at just numbers, that experience, you're like, you got to play Paxton. You got to play along with the field. You're going to miss out on 9Ks, blah, blah, blah. But somewhere in the back of my head, I'm like, no, Angels are due to hit up a lefty. Paxton's coming off two amazing starts. Everyone's in on Paxton. It's just like the golden rule. That's when you fade.
Yeah. It's so hard to correctly judge that stuff. Like, get out of your own head to decide when a trend is real and when it's just, hey, we're 6 weeks, 7 weeks into a season. When in doubt, in DFS, just do the fade.
When in doubt, yes. And I think that's like an instinct thing too. I know some people hate to hear that, but it really is. If you really feel in deep down inside, like everyone's going down this road, you don't have to do the defensive play and play that person as well. There's most likely another pitcher on the slate that might score more points that you can have for 4% as opposed to 50%.
Yeah, there's, and that's the same thing with Fab and season long. Like there's always another guy. It may not even be there this week, who's just basically as good at, like, with certain rookies, maybe there's not at a certain point, if one big prospect is coming up, maybe that's the one big prospect, but like, especially with like two start pitchers or, an outfielder using a fill in for an injured guy for 2 weeks, like it's probably not really that much better than the next thing. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to blow your budget if you're not actually getting anything substantial out of it.
It's true, because a lot of us are wired. You're looking at amount, like average bid spend. It's like, oh, Matt McClain comes up, I must bid, X amount. And then a lot of less time is spent on, if I don't get him, who are my B, C, D, E, F options, who are a lot of times. That's, if a lot of people look back at their Fab history, maybe not everyone, but you look back, some of your best players on your team that you've kept all season are the guy that you got as the fifth conditional for $3.
Yeah, that's a thing I have trouble with, like, is not really paying enough attention to, okay, I need an outfielder. Like, I noticed two or three that I really want, so I'm putting in the bids, and then just throw a bunch of random stuff on there for a dollar to make sure I get someone. Like, if you have the time, that's where you should be spending the time. Make sure you got those guys lined up right. That exactly is part of the reason why I don't have so many teams anymore, because I know that I won't do it, and somebody will, and so they'll win.
One last thing I wanted to ask you we head out here. Well, actually, two things. One, I wanted to ask you specifically about with hitting, like ISO, WOBA, WRC+, like what are the kind of your favorite metrics for kind of picking players for a day, or even to help you in terms of the season? You're looking at, what numbers are you looking at for a hitter? Like barrel rate, like the Statcast stuff. What matters to you with hitters?
I've never heard of any of those things you just said. Did you even just say RBIs? Okay. It's different for DFS as for season long. For when I'm looking in FAB in season long, it's really, I need to make sure that I see something that's going to actually keep them in the real life lineup. So I still tend more towards contact, like plate discipline. That's why I still have Alex Bregman on my team. Like, there's no chance that the Astros are going to just say, we don't like that you're not hitting a lot of home runs, so we're going to sit you. That's a very different thing than DFS, where I pretty much care how hard are you hitting the ball and how much are you hitting in the air. Like, just give me the guy who hits line drives and fly balls and hits them hard. And that's kind of it. So, I mean, if I was going to put a number on it, I would say I look at ISO. But really I'm looking, like, I do look at like the Statcast stuff, like give me barrels and hard hits, and not a bunch of ground balls. That's really kind of it. But for season long, you need more than that, because those guys, those sexy guys who, like, oh, look at the power. Like, they're also the guys that might just be in the minors in 2 weeks.
Is there a stat that you feel is misleading, or that people you read all the time? It's like your pet peeve. You're like, why are people focusing on this? Like, you know, it could be like, you know, max exit velocity, or is there something out there that you're just like, why are people using the stat, and just kind of come clean and tell people why it's not good? Maybe there isn't one.
Yeah, I think there's enough stats now that people use enough different ones that I don't feel like there's one, and none of them are bad, I don't think, in their own way, if used correctly. I think it used to be there weren't so many stats. I remember, like, maybe even like 5 or 6 years ago, before Statcast was really a thing, like WOBA was that thing. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like that
when
was
we first started playing DFS.
Yeah. And like, that was clearly, people didn't understand it, misused it, and it bothered me. I feel like now that no one's really out there yelling, this guy's WOBA, you know? So I don't feel like I need to say that's the one that bothers me. I really think as an industry, there are enough people using all the stats somewhere kind of correctly that I don't think there's anything that stands out to me.
Another question that I thought of before I ask you the final question, Adolis Garcia, what were your thoughts the last couple seasons? What is it that the entire industry has been missing? Like, maybe it's just sometimes just Occam's razor, right?
I mean, I love that guy. I'm just going to look at the price when he said that, because that was one of the guys I got in a bidding war and couldn't get in that auction. Because at the time he came up, he went for 24, which doesn't sound like a lot, but at the time he came up, I had Mullins for 21. And like, so that's the exact example of who's the guy who hits the ball hard and hits the ball in the air. Like, that's him. And the fact that he stole all those bases the last 2 years, like, I didn't see any reason not to think he wouldn't just keep stealing the bases too. Some people are just good and you don't know why they're good. Like, kind of like Javi Baez for a super long time was just good. And everyone's like, this doesn't make any sense.
But the walk rate.
Yeah. And Garcia's better than that. I'm on board. Always have been.
Did you see this Rangers thing coming to this extent?
No.
Nobody did.
No. Now, I mean, I love them as a team, but more almost because of the pitching. And I'm just, I think like you, I just love Corey Seager. Like,
yeah,
that guy can do no wrong. So, I mean, I kind of thought it was a pretty good offense because I love Seager. I kind of like Semien and Garcia. And I think Nate Lowe is okay. Like, but no, I certainly did not see this coming. And I don't expect it to keep up at this kind of rate. But I don't know. I mean, maybe guys like Jonah Heim and Robbie Grossman are kind of really great in their own weird little way. When you get guys like that who can switch hit and kind of do a little bit of everything and nobody can imagine how they could be good. But they just are, you know, and they have basically a team full of those guys. Like even like Leody Taveras and these guys, they're all kind of good in their own weird little way. I'm not sure they have a real weak spot. So I guess I'm sort of on board.
Now imagine if DeGrom comes back.
That's part of why I thought the team was going to be good is the pitching. So you put DeGrom in there. Not that anyone ever thought we'd get a whole year. I hope we'd get a little more than we did. But like Eovaldi's awesome. John Gray is pretty good. Like it's kind of like that rotation that you don't want any of the guys in fantasy other than DeGrom. But if you had a real life baseball team, I mean, you'd sign Martin Perez for your number four starter. I mean, sure.
No doubt. One more baseball question. The Rays, do you like what they're doing there? If you were Kevin, are you on board with what Kevin Cash is doing? Like from a fantasy perspective, it kind of messes with, I don't know if you know, but I somehow landed on my majority of shares. I've got 14 Josh Lowe's, which is like 45%. I'm loving life. It's great. I mean, let's not talk about my pitching. That's a whole different ballgame, but I'm loving that. And I kind of don't mind. Maybe I'm wrong here. Like, I don't mind that he's not getting the at-bats against lefties. Granted, I'm losing run RBI opportunities. And they obviously, like Seattle, for example, gave Kelnick a shot. He's hitting lefties in the middle of the lineup. Maybe I'm missing out here, but I don't know what the method to his madness is, Kevin Cash is, but like, they don't have strict platoons versus like lefty versus righties, right? They leave Jose Siriñan because he's good defensively. Margot plays occasionally. Franco sits occasionally. It's just a weird mix, but it works, right? Luke Rayleigh, what the hell?
It's incredible. Like if you really want to blow your mind, like just try to figure out what Tampa's lineup is going to be for a few days. And you would think, okay, they're facing a righty. Like you have no idea. And it always works out amazingly. And the thing with them is like, how many years have they been just vastly outperforming? There's no team anywhere that I just flat out trust more than Tampa, that they know what they're doing. And if it doesn't make sense to me, that's because they're smarter than me, obviously. Like, I don't know how long they have to keep winning before we all just say they know what they're doing and we all don't understand it. And we need to just shut up about it and let them just keep winning. And that's what they're going to do. Like I'm rooting for them. I don't know how they do it offensively. I mean, the pitching, I get it. I mean, and they've been doing this without, I mean, Glasnow just came back. I mean, they lose Springs and Rasmus and they had no Glasnow for a long time. And they're the best team in the world. Like,
yeah,
they could lose McClanahan, Eflin and Fleming tomorrow. And they'll probably still win the World Series. I don't know how they'll, like, I'm looking at Jake Diekman will become a starter and win Cy Young. Like, I don't know. I don't need to know, but I know that it's right.
I like it. I agree with you. They're just seem to me like a team of destiny, and there's something about their swagger this year. I don't know what it is. Whenever I watch a Rays game, they've gone from like the team I could care less. Like you think about the Longoria days, just like the boring Rays. Now they're just, I don't know, just so much swag. So fun to watch. Like I love to tune into Rays games. One more quick hitter for you. I know you have some work to do, but, if I was to ask you, so this is kind of a two-part question, Corbin Burnes, where does he land overall from the rest of the season? I know this is like literally the toughest question. Is he
you
like
just gave me the ROS? Okay.
Yeah. Is he like a top? Okay. Issue with the ROS? Is he just, a top 12
tweet
guy?
Me. Dave, ROS Burnes? Question mark. Thoughts.
Thoughts. Oh, I love thoughts.
Burnes. Thoughts.
Burnes. Thoughts. Okay. Oh yeah.
I'm sorry. Carry on.
Corbin Burnes, is he going to end up I can't even do a rapid fire. Top 12 rest of season starting pitcher.
I've got to say no. it's bugging me enough, and we're 2 months in. I think he's not Corbin Burns anymore.
Seems like it. We don't know what it is, but sure seems like it. There are three. So okay, there are three sort of starting pitchers that are earning the most so far. Shane McClanahan is tops. Joe Ryan is second. Nathan Eovaldi is third. You got Spencer Strider fourth. You got Mitch Keller up there. Framber Valdez, Zach Gallen. Garrett Cole is a little bit further down the line. If you were to just pick, let's take Strider out of this equation, and you were to pick the best starting pitcher rest of the season, not including past stats, just from June 1st on through the rest of the season. Who is your horse? Who is your SP1, not named Strider?
For fantasy specifically? Yeah,
season-long fantasy. I know, it's a hot seat.
Yeah, because real life, it's Valdez. Love that guy. It really is. But for fantasy, I think it is Zach Gallen.
I like that. I like that. Does he get traded, by the way? By the way, there's something about this man. He's been traded like three times. And
yeah, and every time he gets better. Yes, he's going to get traded and win the Cy Young in both leagues.
Okay. Well, the first one to ever do it. I love it. Dave, thank you so much for joining us today. This is a lot of fun. Honestly, we could have probably gone another hour just like on speed round stuff alone, strategy stuff probably as well. Anything that you wanted to mention, plug, where people could find you?
Yeah, I have one thing to mention, and then I'll mention where people can find me. So it was about eight or nine years ago when I met you, Vlad Sedler, in Vegas. I remember we were in one of the suites at the NPC thing, and I knew who you were from. You were at RotoWire at the time, and I remember the first conversation we ever had. And you know, you were just kind of telling me, kind of just very matter of factly, how you were, where you were in the industry, and what you were planning to do next, and you were gonna, you know, you wanted to be in the industry doing this and writing. And I was like, that guy gets it, you know. He just kind of gets it. Like, I had that feeling. And then, like, now you're like the guy for NFBC content. Like, probably 80% of people like follow your article for Fab. And it makes me proud, like proud dad moment of like, I remember the first time I met you, I was just like, yeah, he's going to do what it is that I think he's thinking he wants to do. Cause he's obviously just that guy. So I just want to say that I am proud of you.
That's awesome. Thank you, Dave. That means a lot to me, man. Thank you very, very much. I remember. Absolutely. Yeah, the first time I was like, oh my God, that's Dave Potts. I got to go talk to him. I think he's drafting. I probably shouldn't bother him. Let me wait till the break.
Yeah, you did. You waited for the break. It was good. But yeah, so thanks for having me on. This was great. You can always find me on Twitter, Dave Potts 2. That's the number 2. My DFS stuff's at Roto Grinders, plugging away every day. And yeah, or come out and eat in and out with us in Arizona this fall. Or, you know, or in Vegas is in and out there as well. Basically, I think that's the takeaway here. If you want to meet me, I will be at in and out.
Thank you so much, Dave. We'll see you. We'll meet you there at in and out. Actually, we'll take the convertible. We'll take a ride down. For the great Dave Potts, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.